Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Barca for All pod. We have a lot of stuff to talk about today. We haven't recorded in maybe 2 weeks, so we're nearing the beginning of the Liga F season, Liga FA, I should say, after it was postponed due to a strike on behalf of all of the players in the league, but we shall get to that later. Before we get into all of that with the league starting and the strike and everything, I just want to ask you guys how you're doing. How have you been? I personally have been looking for jobs. If anyone has any job openings, please send them my way. Specifically within the education industry. Love that. And I've also been playing a lot of early 2000s Flash games with an emulator I found recently that I've been using as a Chrome extension to help me play those games, because Flash was disabled many years ago, which broke my heart. But Borja, Rajesh, whoever wants to go first, how have you guys been doing?
Miserable, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to explain. Barça B lost 5-1 against Espanyol.
Okay, so this is football related.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, football. My life belongs to football. No, I'm joking. No, the weekend was actually pretty nice because I was with my nieces. They came to visit. So from that part, was quite okay. And they are actually Barca fans, so I feel like I have a responsibility there. But yeah, the Espanyol game was awful. We will not mention during the podcast. I hope the audience understands. But yeah, besides that, pretty much okay.
You have to teach them young. I'm glad you recognize that. Rajesh, what about you? How have you been?
I would reflect same as Borja. I had a terrible time. My quarantine got seized, so they are asking for I would need to replace it. So it's not a great time for me.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Well,
but yeah, Barça is back, so the spins are up.
Hopefully, that will make it somewhat better.
Yeah,
I know it'll make it better for me.
Yeah, it does for me as well.
Okay, so now that we've established that we're all miserable. I think we can first start with just like some basic news that I'm sure a lot of you have already heard already. In the last podcast, we talked about AMC leaving. We didn't know quite where. We already gave our thoughts on that. It's probably not the greatest move on management's side, letting her go, but she did officially sign for Atletico Madrid. So she is officially gone now. So after AMC, the next thing that we should touch on is mentioning Rofa's surgery. She has had knee problems since the World Cup. She had them all throughout her tournament with Sweden up until her bronze medal match with them. So she played pretty much the maximum amount of matches that Sweden could play in the tournament. I don't know if I think she was rested for at least a few of them, but... yeah, Sweden went all the way, played as many matches as they could, so she didn't really get too much of an opportunity to rest, considering that she's, like, probably their best player. So she just successfully underwent a surgery on that same knee that was giving her problems. I'm not quite sure how long she will be out for. I've heard a couple of months. Do either of you know?
Officially... nothing has been said. I think many people, me the first one, kind of expected that it would be 1 month because it was the same procedure as Lucy's last part of the season. It was an osteoscopia. But considering his meniscus, it will probably take more time. So yeah, fingers crossed that everything goes well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say more than 1 month for sure.
Okay. Well, so we will be Rofa-less for... probably more than a month. Hopefully more than a month. I mean, we have no reason to rush her back. It's the beginning of the season. The stakes aren't too high yet, so we have we have time to push her back to full strength. Then the next, I'll just go down the list. There are a lot of nominations that came out. There was a lot of discourse about it. We're not going to get into the discourse. Listen, I've been involved in Ballon d'Or discourse for the last many years. Nothing productive ever comes out of it, so we're just, you know, knocked down the list. Aitana won UEFA Women's Player of the Year. Serena Weigman also won Coach of the Year and ahead of Jonathan Giraldez, but she actually did something very sweet in her speech. Her acceptance speech was that she dedicated her award to the Spanish women's national team for fighting against sexism, against everything that they've been fighting against, which I thought was very nice. And Aitana also mentioned that in her acceptance speech. And then after that, we were hit with the Ballon d'Or nominations. Aitana, Rolfa, Oshuala, Salma, Mapi, Patri. Listen, as long as there's a Patri nomination, I don't care. I don't care about anyone else. As long as my girl got it, I don't care. Aitana's going to win that. We know that. She's going to win. And then the best nominees just came out, like FIFA The Best Award, which is such a silly name for an award, but I digress. Aitana, Salma, Walsh, and Mapi were also nominated for those. So, expected. Again, Aitana's most likely going to win that. I believe Jonah was nominated for both of those awards, but I honestly don't think he's going to win either of them. I think Weigman will take them both. Interestingly enough, though, for the best, Jorge Vilda was not nominated. So, I think they kind of had a wake-up call there, which is good. But I'm not going to get too far into that. I'm not discoursing about it. Nothing good ever comes from Ballon d'Or discourse. Moving on. The strike. So we can talk about the strike now, which is probably one of the more interesting topics. We won't get too far into it. I'll just explain more or less what happened. So there was a strike in Liga FA. Four different player unions combined together with most, if not all, of the teams in Liga FA, and went on strike protesting the minimum allowed player salary, which was, before the agreement was met, was 20,000 euros a year, which is not a lot of money. Not a lot of money. At least, you know, for football standards. That lasted throughout the first match week, and eventually the unions in the league agreed upon the baseline salary to increase to 23,000 over the next 3 years. So that's basically the gist of the strike. It's the main demand that the players' unions wanted, and they got it in some capacity. I think they wanted it to increase immediately to 23,000, but they negotiated, and eventually it will reach 23,000 in 3 years. So the league's back on. We will be playing Madrid CFF on the 16th of September. That will be our first match of the season. And Madrid CFF is always a difficult opponent to play against. Do we have any thoughts about that game in particular? I mean, I'm always afraid of Kundanagi. I think she has some serious firepower behind her, and that didn't leave, even though she had a pretty rough tournament with Zambia. Actually, no, she didn't. At the World Cup. She was definitely their best player at the World Cup, so Kundanagi was great. And I think no matter what happens, she's always going to be Madrid CFF's biggest player for us to watch out for. But do either of you have any particular thoughts on the Madrid CFF match that we're going into?
I don't know about the rest of the fan base. Probably many people think, that's the team we lost last year during the league. And they were probably, worried about Kundanagi, Chanda, and probably Esther Laborde as well, who signed for Madrid CFF this summer. But I think last season it was a game with when the league was already won. We were just waiting to play the Champions League final and or during the semi-final. So the players were not probably very activated and actually didn't want 100% to the duels just to not get injured. So I think there's not that much that can assemble to that match last season. So I think we'll probably, we'll see a win. For sure, the Kundaranji thing and how to prevent counterattacks, not losing the ball in dangerous areas and in a bad situation, that probably will be the key. And from that point, I think it will go smooth. My only concern is that it's very early in the season. I mean, it's the first game, and that's probably the best context for smaller teams to catch Barcelona, because I mean, the world players from the Spanish national team and the English team have been training just for 1 week, maybe, very, very few times. So Giraldez hasn't been able to adapt on Apadje or Esme for a long time. And there is some kind of uncertainty from a Barça perspective team as a group. But anyway, I think it would be a good match to watch, and probably with a win. So no worries for real. But
I kind of pretty much have the same thoughts as Bola, because I don't think most of the players are preseason like in the previous seasons, and they're coming after a World Cup without vacation, or maybe like 10 to 15 days, which wouldn't be enough. So yeah, it's kind of right place to be in since there's a lack of playing time before the season starts. And I'm not sure if Jonah is going to put a strong starting 11, or if it could be a mix of rotations here, because most of the B team players were involved in the preseason friendlies. So yeah, I kind of expect not an easy game, but a demanding game from Barça.
Yeah, I could definitely see him trying to experiment a little bit more. I mean, usually you want to set the first match of your season off with a strong foot, but we do have a lot of players that are going to be returning from international duty that haven't played in quite a while. And they're also going to be returning back to international duty not soon after this. So I could see the need for like an extended period of rest, especially considering like most of our internationals are from Spain, who won it and had to go through the entire tournament as starters. I could see if we were to lose, or not even lose, but like to have an unfavorable result against Madrid CFF, I would see that's like not completely off the table, just because of the circumstances of us, of our players probably needing rest. Go ahead, Borja.
No, I was just going to mention that the only concern that I have probably is the fact that we don't have like the same profile of fullback that we have last season, because as you mentioned previously, Rolfo is injured. And Lucia Corrales didn't play against Espanyol, so there is a doubt of whether she's injured as well. And if you miss Lucia, you don't have that kind of profile that probably against Madrid CFF would be useful. So you have there some uncertainty of how he's going to adjust Jonah. She's going to play Ona. She's going to, on the left, she's going to, I don't know, try with even Salma, because actually Salma played the second part of that game against Madrid CFF as a left back. I don't know. It will be good to see, and actually to see if there is any other structural changes within the team. But yeah, I think the fullback situation is the only real concern. Also, it's worth to mention that Madrid CFF doesn't have the best pitch. And actually, I just saw yesterday the game of the Fuenlabrada team, which plays on the same pitch, and the situation was not that very good, because there are some areas where there is no grass, is sand, even on the small boxes as well. So that's another concern, that maybe because there were floods on Madrid two weeks ago, and probably the pitch is not recovered that well. So that's another concern, that probably the ball doesn't circulate as Barca probably won, considering that it's a very possession-based style of play. I think those are the main concerns that I was just thinking about.
And actually, Kira Walsh was not called up to the national team due to an injury, right? So
yeah, she's also, I don't think it's like a big injury, but she's also injured.
She might miss the first game. She might, yeah.
So, outlook not looking amazing. Well, just win like by 8 or something stupid. I could see that happening. Madrid CFF is definitely one of those teams where we either have a really shaky result or we win by like 15 goals. Hopefully that won't happen now. I really do hope that won't happen now, but just considering how much talent they have at their disposal, but you never know. So with that out of the way, we can finally get into the overview / preview of our team, of our transfer window, and our expectations for the team going into this season. So just so we're all on the same page with the signings and who's come in and who's left. So we've only made 2 signings this year for the senior team, Ona Batie and Esme Brooks. They've both come in. And then for our departures / loans, we have AMC, Ana Maria Srnogorcevic, Emma Ramirez, Maria Perez, Jace, Laia Codina, and Nuria Dabano. I don't quite like our transfer window this season. I think it's great that we got Ona, but I think it was more or less an expectation that we got Ona. No matter what anyone says, I am still worried about the fact that we have let go of so many defenders and so many fullbacks. I think that's worrisome. But I think we've said that before. I mean, if I were to like give it a grade, I would say we had maybe like a B or a C transfer window. Like a 7 out of 10. I think a 7 out of 10 is good. But I want to know how you guys feel about it, because I think we're mostly on the same page.
I didn't dislike the transfer window. I think the verdict, on the fair verdict, will have to come out at the end of the season and how it depends, because I think there is some part of investment. Overall, I think this transfer window, what makes is that it makes Barca starting lineup better. Just by signing Ona, that's a very, very good upgrade on the right back, and the starting lineup will be better. You probably lose some depth because you have Rábano as a left back, and probably this season to step up. You have Codina, who had a good World Cup. And you could say maybe now she will step up as well, and you miss Geise, who was a very unique profile as we saw against Chelsea and Wolfsburg. The thing is, we have a smaller squad in order to give more opportunities to players on the first team that didn't have that many last season, and also for Barça B players. I think the verdict will depend on those players will replace properly the depth that we have lost. And that's the thing. Probably Case's profile is something that we won't find on Barça B or in all other of the first team players except Oshoala. But yeah, I mean, the season is very long and the players grow very fast. So we will see. But I think it will depend mostly on the development of those players and if they compensate losing some part of the squad. I don't know. I guess we'll see. But yeah, I think there is a component of economic situation that has conditioned AMC and Rábano being out. But yeah, let's see at the end of the season how we rate that.
And we will eventually reflect on our opinions about this transfer window, because at least for me, I know that my opinions are mostly negative, but I would like to have faith that Jonah knows what he's doing and that Markle knows what he's doing and the other people involved in the operation, you know, are prepared for the relative lack of depth that we have at our fullback positions. So we will see. It's very much up in the air.
I can see
it on the.
I wouldn't say your opinion is negative because I kind of feel the same as you. Like, we might miss a forward and a fullback. Like, there are certain things that can be expected from the B team players or a player who is going to come up from B team to the first team. So I kind of feel these two are the positions where we could have done better in strengthening it with a forward and a fullback. And yeah, let's see.
I do wish you would have signed a forward.
Yeah, center. Like, we don't have a goal scorer now. Like, yeah, we do have Oshala who could score 20 goals, but we need someone to score more than 20 goals.
I mean, given that we didn't sign a striker and given that Bruno is back to full fitness, I would not be surprised if Jonah is happy with the three-person midfield that started for the majority of last season with Padri, Walsh, and Aitana, and whether or not he's going to try, like, actually legitimately try to put Alexia into the match as a false nine. I would not be surprised. Because he did try it in the Mexico tour, and I don't think that means nothing. You know what I mean? I feel like there's something underneath that, that he might actually be wanting to try that out.
Probably the fact that I don't think we are missing Jenny, but probably we're missing Jenny's profile. That player that plays as a striker but comes deeper to generate advantage numeric, like doing a plus one. But JC did it, on the ball, I think JC had some deficiencies that, what I mean is not going deeper and just to touch one ball, but to mix with other players and come even deeper and generate a superiority in other areas, not just close to the striker position.
Right.
I don't know. I think ideally I agree with Reyes about the fullback and I guess a left fullback and a striker. But I think economically, considering Barca's level, if you go for Selma Basha, how much money is it? And actually, is it okay to have two stars as a fullback? I mean, it's good to have Rolfo and Selma Basha competing for the same position. Although I know Rolfo can play as a winger, but on the left, we mostly play with Mariano Pina, who drifts inside. And then as a striker, if you sign, I don't know, probably you guys hate Ara, I don't know. I like her, but
her. I know it's a joke within the Barcelona fan base to hate her, but like, I'm fine with her.
Okay.
Personally.
So if you go for Ada, how much money is it? And actually, is it worthy knowing that she gets so many injuries? And I don't know. I think it's that's a kind of difficult the drawback position.
Yeah, that's the drawback. That's the only negative thought we have in, like, if we need to sign her, because she isn't going to be fit for the whole season, considering what has happened through her career the last three seasons.
I think the only sensitive decision in both positions were if there is a very, very good player with a huge potential I don't know, Selma Bassa 2 years ago, Bani Sow two seasons ago, that would probably would have been the good decision, and doing it for a low fee or even for free. But if that player doesn't exist by now, and probably you have that with Lucia Corrales, which is a very exact profile of a very similar profile to Rolfo's, I don't know if that makes sense to spend a lot of money. Being realistic and considering Barca finances, I think is quite okay. We'll see. This next season will be more changes, but for now, I think Ona was a great addition.
I've said this for years. I don't know how tactically she would fit in, but Katoto is like my dream signing for a striker for us. If she was available, I would want us to get her so bad.
What about Banisha?
I don't watch her enough to have an opinion, but like her pure like numbers, her statistics don't particularly move me. So I don't quite know. But Katoto, hers do. And her, the way she shows up in big games, she does. Ada is Ada. She's undisputed one of the greatest players ever. But since she tore her ACL in, God, what was that, like January 2020? When she's healthy, or like since then, when she's been healthy, she's been on top of the world. But I think her body has just not ever fully recovered from where she was pre-injury. And at this point in her career, she's like, what, 28 years old? How old is she now?
Yep, 28.
She's 28. She is 28. I don't know if it'd quite be worth it. Especially considering the state of our medical staff, I think it's fine. I think our medical staff is fine. At the very least, you know, we've probably learned from our mistakes with the ACL tear. But yeah, I don't think it would ever make sense. We kind of went off topic there with the, sorry, Borja.
Yeah, I just wanted, I'm just curious. I mean, Reyes brought up the name of Bani Sow.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested because I like her, but Reyes, why do you mention her?
Yeah, like Kelsey used to say me that we could sign Manisha. That was back in 2020, I guess. And she was keep on asking me like to look for the profile. We used to write these articles. So we kind of scouted into her and we really liked that profile then. So I was asking her if she has the same thoughts or is she feeling indifferent now?
I mean, I watched a couple games with her when she was caught. What team was she was with, like, in 2020? Bordeaux? She was with Bordeaux, right?
Yeah.
And then she went to City. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't tell you now what my thoughts were, but she had good numbers. She had good numbers. I don't know. And I couldn't really tell you now what her profile was, but yeah, we had this trial to this statistics program. I don't quite remember what it was, but it was really in depth and it covered a lot of players. And we were able to highlight a couple of interesting prospects back then. I should actually look at that to see like what actually aged well and what didn't, because there were some like kind of nobody underground players that were highlighted as like some of the best passers in the world, some of the best dribblers in the world, whatever. So maybe we can look back on that data, Rajesh, someday. But yeah, I don't really have any solid opinions about Bunny Shaw right now, unfortunately. I wish I was able to contribute more to this discussion.
I mean, like, we don't have to worry about that because she renewed her contract again.
She's probably never coming here. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fine. So that discussion is, I mean, we didn't sign a striker. That's pretty much it. That's the whole discussion is out the window. But with our new signings, I think we can talk about the changes that we'll have to our best starting 11. And we've already mentioned some interesting things. We've mentioned Paños versus Cata, which me and Borja had a little back and forth about before the podcast started. We also can talk about Alexia potentially being used as a false nine, maybe. I want your guys' thoughts first so I can maybe rip off your opinions. I'm not sure what my thoughts are yet.
First, we could start from the point where we all agree. Onapati will be the starting right back, right?
Yes. Over, heavy guess.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. As long as Rocco is healthy, she will be starting it right back.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No discussion. So yes. We can move forward from that. Sorry, Lucy Browns, you will sit a lot of times on the bench this season.
I'm not.
And you can leave the club next season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ideally in the winter or now even, deadline day transfer. There's still an hour.
Actually,
never know.
Her leaving could help our financial situation.
It could. She's probably on hella wages right now. Absolutely. I have a question for you guys. When do we start... this might be a little controversial. When do we start phasing out Paredes?
I think probably by next season. Because she has signed a renewal for 2 seasons, right? So next season could be the last season. And she could move on to have a fairy tale ending at Athletic Club.
I don't know. Probably we'll see. I mean, football goes like very fast and everything is changing very fast as well. I don't know. With all players, you never know when they're going to start decaying physically. We kind of didn't expect from Jenny to physically not providing that soon. But anyway, I guess
it will depend. Drop off. I mean, we talk about it a lot, but her drop off in that last 6 months of being a Barcelona player was insane. I've never seen a drop off happen that fast, that bad.
Yeah, so the thing is probably the same as Lewandowski and the men's team. You never know when Irene Paredes is suddenly starting declining, but so far so good. I think we'll see at the end of the season, and if she starts getting this season, probably they will look for a proper center back as a replacement, or even if she ends her contract but already having that kind of center back. And it will probably depend as well on the development of Gianna and also Martina from the B team, which I think she has a very, very, very high potential. And probably it will be probably enough very soon for her. But I think at the end of the season, we will see.
Do you think Jenna will ever fully replace Irene to be like the starting center back? Like, do you think that will happen? Or that she even is good enough to?
In the short term, no. And I think Irene is a very well-rounded player. The only scenario where I see Irene losing her place is because she starts not providing physically, because she has to defend with a lot of meters behind her back, and she has to do very short run-ins with a lot very powerful. And if she starts decaying in that sense, that would be very worrying, because Barcelona won't be able to sustain that high defensive line. So that would be the break rule for me. If she can maintain that, even if she doesn't win that much aerial duels or even round duels, I think she will be the starting center back. But we'll see.
Mappy left center back, we can all agree. Rolfo left back again. The biggest...
We didn't mention about Catan Paños, by the way.
Do we want to do that now?
So we're talking off the record about the possibility of that at the end of the season, we potentially could see Paños being selected over... Cata over Paños as a starting goalkeeper. My main thing is considering that you have Cata on a very, very good good momentum coming from the World Cup, do you want to stop that and keep on Paños, which probably we have seen her best matches? Or do you want to keep on investing on Cata, and which I think she has a great potential? The thing is that the Spanish situation during the World Cup has led Giraldez to probably make the decision sooner than expected. And then you have also the thing that Paños is going to end her contract this season, and probably you want to lower her expectations on her future salary if you want to renew her. And probably that's a very good scenario to now give more importance to Cata. So that was mainly the thing. In a pure footballistic terms, I think Paños has a slightly better stopping than Paños. She's slightly better with her feet. I think by now the differences are not very wide. I think Paños is slightly better just because of experience and climbing balls on the air and sweeping as well. But I don't know, you guys, what you think about it. But I think, yeah, as I said, I think this decision might have come sooner for Giraldez. I don't know if you guys think that they will Caños and Paños and Cata will split the matches more evenly than this past season, or what do you think about Paños and Cata?
I think probably the most realistic and logical thing that will happen is that they share goalkeeping duties. I could see Cata maybe playing the Copa de la Reina. I could see her maybe playing, you know, the group stage of the Champions League. But I don't see this season happening where she fully overtakes her. Not yet. I think I don't really know what our plan was when we even signed her and then sent her on that loan spell to Sevilla, because she's always been very good, but I feel like maybe the people in charge, God, who was the coach when that happened? Fran Sanchez? Xavi Llorens?
You mean
Was it Cortez?
No. Yeah. I think it was. No. You mean the Rafols and.
No, when the decision was made
on
sign Cata.
Oh, yeah. So it was
Cortez.
Yeah, okay. It was Cortez. But I think the decision would have comes from Markel, I would say.
Okay. Because yeah. I guess the assumption that they made there was that Cata would eventually overtake her, and that Paños would probably decline faster than expected. I have no clue, but it's 4 years later now, and Paños is doing fine. She did have that poor season last season. Not last season, the season before last season, so 2021 to 2022. And then the Euros just capped off that bad season, and it just wasn't looking good. But I would say she's come back, and I would say she's returned to her level. I agree, Borja, as of right now, I feel like they're pretty similar in terms of their level. Paños just has the more experience. But I don't know, it's just weird because I didn't think it would happen this fast. It was like, it's like a really weird domino effect of like Jorge Bilda and Paños not being caught up and that whole thing, and then that eventually turning into something that we didn't expect at all to happen, which was Spain winning the World Cup. And it's like this goalkeeper that we have who just won the World Cup and quite frankly had a very good tournament is like sitting on a bench. I don't think that's fair. So either we give her playing time now or I could see her leaving and finding, easily just walking into someone else, some other big club starting 11 next summer. I could see that happening. So we do need to keep her. We just have to find there's a very intimate balance on, you know, do we push out this club legend probably early before she's actually started to really decline? Or do we keep her on and then maybe risk Kata not being happy or being unsettled because she's on the bench? It's very touchy. It's very touchy.
And I would say let's not forget her agency, because they could play a key role.
Interesting. If you I want also to agree with that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would agree with Borja on this, that we could, I mean, like, Kata could end up being the starting goalkeeper at the end of the season.
Borja, I have a question for you. Do you think this means anything for the Font sisters? Or do you think their development and them staying at Barcelona is still, like, on track?
I think Gemma Font will leave Barca next season. I'm quite surprised that she didn't by now.
I thought she was going to leave 4 years ago, and then 3 years ago, and then 2 years ago, and then last year. So
yeah, but considering that she had like a very good season last season, where she played so much, is because Kata was not available and because Paños got injured. You could think that, well, she's going to profit from this momentum and look for a good team. But I think it's independent cases. I think Gemma will leave, and I think Che is the future of Barcelona goalkeeping. it will depend mostly on her development and Kata. I think Kata and Che will fight for the position in the medium term. So I think that's where I see some competition, some dependencies. But for now, I think Che will spend this season on the Barça B, and we'll see next season. But for now, I think both are independent cases.
Okay, so I think we're good to talk about the goalkeeper situation. So we have the defense sorted out: Ona, Irene, Mapi, and Rufa. The midfield is interesting because we talked earlier about Alexia potentially coming back to play as a false nine, especially that given that Oshuala isn't always at her best. We got rid of Jace. Our striker pool is probably the barest it's been in the past couple of years, if not longer. So with that being said, the big question is, are we still going to maintain the Walsh, Aitana, Patri midfield three? And maybe make Alexia into a false nine once she fully comes back, which I'm pretty sure she's fully recovered by now. Or do we go back to Aitana, Alexia, Patri, midfield three, and then maybe figure out something to do with Salma as a striker, or Oshuala as a striker even? You know, where does that leave Mariona? Where does Salma fit into this situation? For me, I think it is not ever worth it when you have all three players available to break up APA. That midfield is one of the best midfields, arguably the best midfield in women's football history. It's untouchable, and I feel like Jona should treat it that way. And whatever that means for our forwards, I don't know, but we saw that when Alexia, in the past, the two seasons before she tore her ACL, she was, I believe, our top scorer, even though we had two incredible strikers in Jenny in Oshuala. So I don't think there should ever be a circumstance where we break that up, because I don't think Alexia will be better, even post-injury, as a false nine than she would be as just her normal position as a center midfielder.
You mentioned about not breaking the APA, but considering that Barcelona plays with a 3-4-3 on the ball, with a box on the midfield, with the winger coming inside, couldn't we see Wash, Patri, Aitana, and Alexia, playing in the position that she does usually? I mean, on the left part of the midfield.
Wash, Patri is a double pivot?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's what we saw last season. Most of the times. And apparently, some
I didn't like it.
Yeah, but the thing is, what Giralde would do it. I mean, I could be more into a 4-3-3 or whatever, but that's what Giralde apparently enjoys the most. I think is the most competitive person.
I think the
box on the midfield is the structure that allows you to place your most talented players on the field at the same time. And that probably, if Giralde thinks he's on that part, and it will be very likely, because we don't have like a pure left winger. If we don't consider Salmas a pure left winger, I think that he will keep the same structure, and that would imply, if you want to, yeah, I think there is a big potential of Alexia playing as a false winger or as a false nine. And yeah.
Rajesh, what were you going to say?
Look, I was trying to say that I kind of not going to like it. I mean, like, I'm not going to like that kind of setup, because that would send Pina to the bench. So, like, I'm not really a big fan of that. Like, I would instead, like, be happy with the APA. Like, we have a left-footer midfielder, and you will have a left-footer center back. So that would give you a more positional or like a better structural advantage, having a left-footer players in the team. So, like, I wouldn't like Alexia playing as a left winger, which she has done previously before 2019, I would say. So yeah, I think APA would be a much better option than having a box midfield of four players in the middle.
Digging into the thing of not breaking the APA, you have not discovered, because we already knew that Aitana has a lot of goal scoring ability, but you have found this season Aitana having a pretty high goal contribution, goals and assists. Do you want, if you come back to the APA classic of Aitana playing more deeper, playing more closer to Patri on the build-up, do you want to miss that version of Aitana?
Which, yeah, I mean, Patri,
that
will
be a lot of goals.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's something like, that has to be made, but I think there is very good arguments to keep Aitana playing as on the box as the right number 10.
We could actually make some adjustments to the leg structure, because we do have Wana Bache now, so like she could have a like similar role to that of Aitana. She can like carry the ball forward, which Aitana used to do in the right side of the team. So I think like that's not going to disrupt the APA a lot, if you could understand like what I'm trying to say here.
You're saying absolutely. That like, yeah, that Ona is probably going to help more in the build up than maybe Bronze or Torrejon would have in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree with that. So I think, yeah, Ona coming definitely does unlock a completely different aspect of the APA midfield, where they probably, especially Aitana, won't have to be worrying nearly as much about our defensive issues. About what Borja said, I do know that there are arguments. I think that they're bad ones. Because if we're just looking at the midfield three of Alexia, Aitana, and Patri as, you know, what gets the best numbers out of all three of our players, the answer obviously is, you know, if Alexia does return to form and returns to the same player that she was before she left, Alexia's goal scoring and her goal contributions in the past 2-3 seasons before her injury outshone everything that Aitana did last season. Each of her last 3 seasons before she was injured were better than Aitana's last season this past year. Not just from pure goal scoring numbers, although that is true, but just in terms of what she brought to the team. To me, Alexia brings more to the team than Aitana does, if we're just doing a head-to-head comparison. I mean, of course, Aitana is, like, borderline irreplaceable. I'm not trying to disparage her in any way. But if we're going to put them head-to-head, we have to be honest about what the numbers were, how the team played before Alexia was gone, and the fact that the team played better before Alexia was injured. You know, I mean, a lot of people have been saying or have been like pushing this narrative that Aitana has like a new version of her has been unlocked. And while that is true, I don't quite think that this new version of Aitana benefits the team as much as Aitana did before Alexia's injury and before she had that different role that she had compared to last season. I just feel like because she was sort of pushed into having a more main role, having a more, like, being objectively our star player, I don't quite know if that fit her more than it did being sort of like a cog in the Barcelona machine.
I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
Aitana won a Champions League without Alexia, but Alexia hasn't. So the narrative isn't going to work here. I'm sorry for that. I kind of feel she's an important cog of the team. Like, we don't know what potential we are going to lose if she is going to leave Barcelona at some point, which could actually really happen. So, like, I kind of disagree with what you are saying with respect to Aitana, because she is going to be the next best player from Barca. Right, right, right. So, like, each and every player is equally important, I would say, like, when we consider the APA midfield. So, I don't see one player is better than the other, because if we lose Patri, we are definitely not going to replace her. So, yeah.
Like, I do agree with you.
I don't think, like,
I do agree with you. I do agree with you.
Yeah.
So, because I think really the only way that I could look at it then is from a numbers perspective. And objectively, the numbers with Alexia were better than the numbers with Aitana.
Yeah. I mean,
but that doesn't tell us everything, so you're right.
Actually, the numbers comes into play when we look into these annual awards. So if you take these numbers out of contention, then Patri should be the Ballon d'Or winner.
And she should be.
Seasons. Yeah.
And she should be.
Yeah, so I would say, like,
you heard it here first. Patri Guijarro should be winning the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. But, like, if you're just looking into the potential of these players, then I don't think any of them could be replaceable when they are at their best.
I don't think Aitana is replaceable. I don't think she is in any sense. But I do think that her role before Alexia's injury is better for the team as a whole than it was after Alexia's injury. I don't think she should be the main player, like the star player.
Like, you should, like, think about the fullbacks we had back then when Alexia won the award. We had Marta playing and I'm not sure who was that.
Alexia had Layla. Fullback.
Yeah.
She had Layla.
So yeah, you just need to have one player who just needs to track back and defend those counterattacks. And Aitana was given this job, so I think she probably doesn't have to do the same thing again since we have better fullbacks now. So yeah, like, it's kind of, it could be a long discussion if we are going into details of talking about this.
Yeah, thing. At the very least, I think we need to see it again with Alexia post-injury, plus Ona coming in and having, like, an actual right back instead of Lucy Bronze or Marta Torrejón. I think we deserve to see both of those things happen and then make the judgment. And I would hope that Yona does that, because what we saw with APA from 2020 to 2022 was like nothing women's football has ever seen ever. And I think it would just, even though we were able to see this new version of Aitana and who she could be outside of, you know, I don't want to say Alexia's shadow, but if we're being honest, that's kind of what it was. I don't necessarily think that we should be so quick to like sacrifice it, but I do want us to see what that would look like again after all of these changes have happened. Borja, I want your thoughts on that.
I don't know. It's a difficult, topic. I don't know. I was mostly enjoying your topic because I didn't want to fire shots on myself. I have very different. I think from time to time about that. I don't know. I think doing prediction is very hard at this point because everything will change during the season, and it will be about finding the balance within the team. So I don't know. In my view, I don't know. I don't want to cut my fingers at this point. I will let you with those bold predictions.
Okay. So undecided on the midfield. Great. And I guess if we're undecided on the midfield because of Alexia maybe taking up a false nine role, then that means that we're probably undecided on Salma versus Pina versus versus Mariona, which is a whole debate in and of itself. But it's also a debate that can't even be answered if, you know, if we don't have the midfield sorted out, because I think honestly the midfield is probably the biggest thing that we need to look at whether or not it changes. I personally hope it does, at least just to see like how we play, even what our numbers are, if we want to look at it that way, whether or not our numbers do improve pre-Alexia versus post-Alexia in our midfield three. So I don't know. I hope that we don't play a double pivot. I think that's gross and I'm kind of tired of it.
I just wanted to add anything to something that you just read. I would say there is one thing about the double pivot and the profile that plays alongside Patri is that, for instance, against a very high pressing team, you will probably want Aitana close to Patri on a double pivot, because Aitana has the ability, either if it's dribbling or just carrying the ball, to overcome players and to allow Barcelona getting out of the build-up. But Kira doesn't stand out that much in that context, and probably you want her for when a team is defensive on a low block, because she has that ability to of switching play and filtering passes through the defensive block. So I think we are thinking that of the best players, but probably will come down a lot to the team we are facing and how they defend, because you have different profiles on the midfield and you wanted to play with it. Probably Patri and Aitana are the only players that for me are starters 100%, and the rest will depend on the rival and the context. Even Alexia would say, I'm sorry.
Oh man. Yeah, that's a lot to think about.
I mean, like, we should talk about preseason form of Claudia Pina.
I didn't even think about that, because she was really good at the Mexico tour. She was really good at the Mexico tour.
Yeah.
Do we think that she has any place in our best 11?
Yep, I would say she's going to kind of play as the inverted left winger.
But where? Oh, left winger?
Yeah.
Over Mariona?
Yeah, that was the same question I was going to make.
We have too many good players, you guys. It's so terrible.
Yeah, I think Pina. Pina would be the starting 11. And it could change as the season progresses. It could be between Mariona and Pina. But as far as now, I would say like Pina should be in the starting 11 against Madrid CFF.
I think it depends a lot on the team again. It's kind of the same point I made with Walsh or Aitana playing as a double pivot. I don't know. Mariona relies a lot on her physicality to, for instance, holding the ball. So I would say against slow blocks, probably Pina makes more sense because she stands out even more in tight spaces and she could provide a lot in that sense. And probably Mariona with a high defensive team because she's more aggressive. She has more speed. She's more aggressive to space, I mean. And she can hold the ball, probably would be more useful in that sense. I think in the end, it comes down to profiles and what your opposition are doing in order to counter her weaknesses better. So I think it will depend a lot. For me, the false winger role is the position or role where the differences between the both players is smaller.
Claudia definitely plays more centrally than Mariona does, I would say, right?
Yeah, I think Mariona wants to drift more and goes to other places rather than Pina.
Right. So really, it kind of defeats the purpose of making an ideal starting 11, because it's like, Jonah's going to use these different players with different profiles based on the opponent. On paper, I don't know. I feel like right now, in the form that Claudia is in, she would probably make it into our best 11, though. Just as a baseline. But also, Mariona was really good at the World Cup. I don't know. It's a difficult question. And Selma was, obviously.
The thing is whether Selma will play as a 9. Because as a false winger, I see her, she struggles in tight spaces.
She does, yeah.
And interpreting certain tactical situations.
We would probably get the best out of her if she was a 9, honestly. I could see her starting to phase out Oshuala and maybe even transitioning fully into like our starting 9. I could see that starting to happen. So if we have our best 11, I guess, more or less established as much as we can establish it, what do we think we're going to, or how do we think we're going to be performing in all, I guess, 4 competitions, if we count the Supercopa? I guess the biggest thing to talk about is the Champions League, because I would assume that the expectation is that we're going to be winning the league and winning the Copa de la Reina pretty comfortably. But if we're talking about the Champions League, we have to think about, well, Juventus, Levante, and Arsenal are already out. Levante was probably not going to pose that much of a threat, but Juventus was kind of a shocker because they were pretty scary against Lyon last year. And then Arsenal were obviously semifinalists. So both of those two are out now. And the qualification rounds haven't even been over yet. But for me, I think I'm not particularly moved by any other club in Europe. I mean, we haven't really seen how they've changed that much since they made all their signings. I think Chelsea would probably be the biggest team to beat. I'm not quite too moved by Lyon right now, I gotta be honest. And I just really can't quite think of any other team that would pose us that big of a threat. I mean, PSG don't move me. Arsenal are gone. United don't move me. God, I forgot all about Wolfsburg. And Bayern. Bayern do kind of move me a little bit. Wolfsburg don't. They never really do. Honestly, I would say our biggest threats would probably be Bayern and Chelsea for the Champions League. But I could see us winning both of those matches. Not easily, but I could see us doing it.
I see Lyon there, and not just because of historical context. I think they are always competitive. And if we face them on a final, on just one match, it would be even more tight because you never expect. And if you fail on the game plan, you probably lose 45 minutes. I don't know. I think it will depend a lot on April, May, and how teams get there. By now, it's nearly impossible to predict anything. Chelsea made a very good transfer window, and PSG did a pretty bad. Like, they seem like they have lost touch with the rest of the teams.
You said PSG?
Yeah, I think PSG. Yeah, I think it's mostly Chelsea, Lyon, and we'll see Wolfsburg and Bayern how it goes.
Bayern have really always had a very good team on paper, but they have just, when it comes to like the bigger matches with the quarterfinals and the semifinals, they just haven't been able to do it.
Probably Magda and Pernil would add some experience to that. But yeah,
I hope for the sake of the Bundesliga, and just because I like Pernil as a person. God, I hope she gets her form back. I really do with Bayern, because the player that she transformed to with Chelsea, it was like a shadow of her former 2018 and 2019 self. So hopefully, I mean, at least from a neutral perspective, I hope that does happen. As a Barcelona fan, I hope it doesn't happen if the circumstance does come where we do meet up with Bayern in the Champions League. So, but again, Wolfsburg, again, they just don't, they don't move me. I hope that doesn't bite me in the ass, like it almost did last season. Because Payor and Pop are nothing ever to underrate or undermine or whatever, but they haven't really made that many moves with their defensive back line. Well, their back line, and they haven't really strengthened it that much, so I don't know if they'll be a threat again anytime soon. Hopefully not. God, I don't want that to bite me in the ass, but you never know. But yeah, I think we can pretty much unanimously agree that we should be expected to win the league and the Copa del Reina. Right, yeah. And then I guess we can wrap up our talk about the league as a whole with just a couple of rival watches against Atleti and against Real Madrid with the transfers that they made and what their team looks like now. They haven't made any like super big transfers since the Caicedo transfer in February. Although they did add, well, I shouldn't say that they haven't made any like super big ones, because they did add Haley Rasso, and they did add Signe Brun. Am I missing someone? I feel like I'm missing someone.
Milan Chavas on the as a goalkeeper.
Okay.
Oyan Hernandez.
Okay. Hernandez, I think, is worth mentioning. But still, I mean, they're just not league-winning caliber players. And that goalkeeper, I doubt that she's going to overtake Misa, right?
So, yeah, and actually, during the preseason, she didn't have a good time, to be honest.
Well, there we go. And then, so them, I could see them finishing second or third, as they usually do. Atleti, our historic rival, they have had an interesting window. They have brought in a Venezuelan player from Real Sociedad, whose name I don't remember.
Gabi Garcia.
Yep, thank you. AMC, the Manchester United midfielder whose name I don't know how to pronounce, Vildebarisa? I don't know. The main thing that I've heard about her is that Man United fans have been very upset for the past 2 odd years that she was not getting a starting position over Katie Zellum. So, whatever that means to us. She came in more or less in an exchange for Guerrero, if I'm not mistaken. This happened like a couple days ago, so I forget.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And they also let go of Maitane Lopez, Virginia Torresilla, which was kind of a big deal, Sashkova, and I don't know if this matters, but Alejandra Bernabe. I don't recognize that name, but she went to Chelsea, so maybe that means something. Otherwise, I do think that Atleti upgraded with their signings. On table. Oh my god, I didn't even say. Esther left Real Madrid. Esther Gonzalez left Real Madrid. So she's not in the league anymore, which personally, she's always annoyed me. So I would say that's a win for me specifically because I don't know, I just don't really like her that much, but I would say that's an upgrade. What'd you say?
And it's a win for Real Madrid.
Yeah. I honestly do think that that's a good thing for Real Madrid. Who is meant to replace her or like take her spot though? The French kid?
Brun?
Oh, I guess so. Ugh. I don't know how that's gonna work. I think this will be the first time in Signe Brun's career. Well, maybe not the first time, but like, yeah, probably the first time that she's played for like a big club and will probably have a starting position because she's always been an off the bench forward. So that should be interesting. I think Atleti are coming out as the better team between those two at the end of the transfer window.
I feel like that's something we say every season, and
I know, isn't it? That,
see, God, they still don't qualify for Champions League.
I know, it's stupid. Atleti really fell off after 2019. I don't know what happened. I should do a deep dive into that. But I mean, yeah, I mean, neither of the crops of players that came in, aside from like Caicedo, or like anything really special, really world class, at least I don't think they've had the chance to be, or they haven't proven themselves to be, or whatever, even if they do have the potential. So I guess either of them is a coin toss. I hope Atleti come back. God, I miss that rivalry a lot. And I appreciate it more than I appreciate the Barcelona-Real Madrid rivalry, just because the El Clásico Femenino, to me, like, ever since the inception of Siri Tacón, has seemed a little, it's just seemed kind of fake. I think the passion is there, it's just the whole dynamic of it with the team being bought and blah, blah, blah. It just seems, I don't know, weird, robotic to me. It seems like it came out of nowhere, which it kind of did. You know, it didn't have that years of history to be created on organically on its own, which has always bothered me. But yeah, that's, I mean, there's nothing crazy exciting going into this season. With Esther Gonzalez out, what is our Pichichi prediction? So top scorer of the league. I could see Alba Redondo taking it again, just because we don't know how Alexia is going to come back. Oshoala hasn't been on the top of her game in quite a while. I still feel like Selma is still getting used to her consistency and her decision-making and blah, blah, blah. And if we do have her as a nine, it'll be a new role. And I also don't think that Brun has it in her to be that sort of, you know, score every game type of forward. So I could see Alba taking it again pretty easily.
Mine is Alexia Putella Segura.
Alexia Putella Segura. Good shout.
Yeah, my thing
who is I've never heard of her before.
I kind of agree with what you said, but in the end, Alba Redondo has not shown herself as a very consistent player. I mean, like, she has a pretty good season. Next one is going to be as good. I don't know. And the thing for me to say Alexia is the fact that Alexia has a very goal scorer ability, and the fact that she shoots penalties and free kicks. So that's at least true. Plus 5 or plus 8 goals every season.
That's true.
So I think that's why my decision.
Do we think Amayor Sariegi of Real Sociedad could come back and do anything, or has she found her level?
Her last part of last season was good, but in the end, Amayor plays as a winger and
right.
as a right winger being right footed. So in the end, she won't have that many chances. So that's why I would say that she will get better than last season, but I don't think she will be on the run for the PTT.
Rajesh, do you have thoughts?
I was trying to say Oshoala.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, she would. Like, she's kind of an unpredictable player. She wasn't having a great season last time, but the year before, she had a good season. So I would say maybe like this time she's lucky and she could win the Pichichi.
Okay. And then for our last thoughts about the Liga Efe, Zamora Trophy, which is the goalkeeper that has, I believe, conceded the least amount of goals within a certain number of minutes. Like, you have to pass, like, a minute's threshold, and then whoever conceded the least amount of goals, whatever. Paños, Misa, or Catacol? I think it's going to be Paños, just because I don't see Cata overtaking her. At least as a regular starting player in the league, I don't see that happening.
But, I mean, Paños hasn't been able to compete for Zamora because she hasn't played enough matches, not just last season, but for 2 last seasons.
Did she not? I think she won it last season, didn't she?
No.
What?
No. Misa has been winning it 2 in a row just because of that.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
No way.
And with Cata this season probably playing more matches, I don't think Paños will be a candidate. So I would say.
But do you think Cata will play the league matches?
No, even if he's. I think they will split matches. No, I don't know if 50-50% or in which way. But for sure, Paños is not going to play 22 games in the league game, in the league this
season.
You
don't think so?
Nope. So I think it will be Misa. And I think her most.
Again.
Yeah. And I think the alternative would be Lola Gallardo. And just in the case that Atleti is very competitive defensively. If not, like we have seen these 2 seasons, it will be Misa.
AMC is going to save them defensively. Lagarde will be back to where she was in 2019, manifesting it right here, right now. Rajesh, I would assume that your opinion is something of the same.
I would say Sandra Panos.
Okay. So I was convinced by Borja. I do I think realistically Paños will not play enough matches in the season to be able to qualify for Zamora, even though she will probably be the better keeper than Misa. So unfortunately that's probably the case. And that's pretty much it for our league preview. Before we leave though, I think we should at least mention a little bit about what's going on with the Spanish national team. Oh God, what did you just send in the group chat? Oh
That's
wow.
The thing is, while we are recording this, the players are still reunited in order to agree whether to come back to the national team or not. So we still don't know what is happening for real. The only thing we know is the Vila Rubiales, yeah.
Yeah, so Jorge Vilda and Luis Rubiales. Well, Vilda was sacked. Rubiales said and revealed in an interview with Piers Morgan that he was resigning. Said some garbage on the way out, whatever, we don't need to pay attention to that. But they're both gone now. We don't know who's replacing Rubiales, but we do know who replaced Vilda. Her name is Montse Tomé. I believe there's an accent on the, at the end of her last name. She is a former Barcelona player in like 15 years ago, and she was Jorge Vilda's assistant coach throughout the past couple of years. You may know her as the woman who Jorge Vilda conspicuously grabbed her tit at the World Cup when he was celebrating Olga's goal, which was so weird. Or you may know her as one of the people who signed the resignation letter of the coaching staff for the women's teams. She was one of them. She was one of the women who sat in the front row of the No Voy a Dimitir speech that Rubiales gave, who looked very visibly uncomfortable. She did not clap. She was sitting next to Sonia Bermudez. That's her. She is replacing Jorge Vilda, at least right now. Who knows what the future will bring? A lot of people criticized that appointment because it just seemed like the RFEF throwing a woman in people's faces and saying, look at this, this is a woman. Aren't you happy now? Even though she has no senior coaching experience, she's tied to the old quote-unquote regime of the RFEF. There's a lot of negatives to her appointment. She tweeted something disparaging less 15, less 15, whatever. So a lot of people are very much not happy with her appointment, and that goes beyond fans and to the players. Players have still and are still refusing to be called back into the national team or making themselves available. They are currently right now deliberating amongst themselves whether or not they think that the RFEF has done enough to allow them to come back, or like to prompt them to come back. And we still don't have an answer for that, which we probably will within a couple hours. So we chose kind of an inopportune time to record. But that's what's happening with Spain. We don't know who's going to make themselves available, who's not, whether it'll be a united front. Hopefully it will. But I do remember reading that there was sort of like a rift between the group of players. Some want to return. Some think that the playing conditions are acceptable now. Some don't. But a tweet posted by El Larguero just said that they don't know what the players are asking for from the RFEF to make them selectable again. So there's no response yet. I suppose that might be something that we talk about going into the next episode. And we'll probably know within the next couple of hours, but did I miss anything about Spain? Or like, supposedly they're still showing a united front, they just maybe disagree within their own group. So I don't know. I think it's good that they're sticking together still. it's something that they needed when the original Las Quince strike started last year. But that didn't happen, and now we're here. So I think other than that, we are good. I think we've pretty much touched on everything that we need to touch on. Madrid CFF will be playing at their home ground on September the 16th. So, and it's at a good time for me. It's at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank God that never happens. So, yeah. That's pretty much everything that we have for you guys today. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.